Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We've been arguing about this on Twitter about Julio, and a lot of fans got up into their feelings about Julio wanting to be paid. When you have a list, let's just go to this list here. Antonio Brown, 1. Mike Evans, 2. DeAndre Hopkins, 3. Sammy Watkins, 4. Jarvis Landry, 5. A.J. Green, 6. Davante Adams, 7. All those guys make more money than Julio. And Julio's just saying, wait a minute now. And now the other side of that, of course, is what you were talking about earlier, and I think it's fair to bring it back up. Julio had how many touchdowns last year, Hugh?
Three.
Yeah, three.
Three.
That's a good game for Julio in the past.
Yeah. And the problem is, John, when you look at the numbers, now, obviously, there's more to it than just the touchdowns. I understand that. And Julio put other people in position to be successful. But when you talk about all those other people that you put on that list that's ahead of him and getting paid, they have more touchdowns than he had last year. Now, the other numbers pale in comparison as far as receptions and yardage. They pale in comparison, especially Jarvis Landry and Sammy Watkins' numbers. But it can be argued that, you know, touchdowns matter. And they do for receivers. They really do. And they had both of those guys had more touchdowns in the season than Julio did. And I understand that. But there were key moments during the season last year. Well, Julio was a non-factor where he came up short. I mean, and that's a fact. And there are games that we can recall where, even on my Twitter feed, people were asking, okay, where's Julio? Why isn't he on the field? And for him to have that kind of season last year and to basically come back and say, listen, I need to be paid more money per this Ian Rappaport story and the fact that the Falcons are open to renegotiating all of this, that speaks volumes to me. That is like the boldest move that you can make at the receiver position, especially coming off the season that you just had.
He's 29 years old. He's been in the league for 7 years now. He has had more receiving yards than any player in the NFL over the last three seasons, but at the same time, he is 29 years old, and yet it seems the Falcons are going to rework it. Look, I think this is – my guess is – that this will all work out and they can kind of work his contract that will make Julio happy. It will benefit the Falcons. Julio's in Alabama. He's working out. Falcons are saying we got no problem with that, and they shouldn't. He is a veteran who's been around. I'm not concerned about this. It just is because of everything that's gone on here. You have – it's just he takes his – it's the whole social media – well, two things to me. Set aside what he did production-wise last year, Hugh. The social media issue with him – and it was a bit of an issue, at least to some Falcons fans. And then the drafting of Calvin Ridley with the number one overall pick kind of led to kind of a – all these events kind of came together.
I'll tell you what. This would be – this is why I think that this is an interesting story. Number one is the events that happened before we even got to the point where we're talking about money. And shout out to my man Randy Mack, because Randy Mack was the first one to text me and say, hey, man, this is about money. Julio wants more money. But for Julio to take all the Falcons pictures off his social media, which kind of led us to speculate something was going on, for him to do that, then a few weeks later, for the Atlanta Falcons to draft the receiver, and then even after that, for Ian Rappaport to come out with his story, that leads people to believe that there was something definitely there. I mean, and from what it looks like it was, and this is what it was. He wanted more money. I just think that the way that he's going about it is really, really bold on his part. And the fact that the Atlanta Falcons are okay to negotiate shows how much Julio means to this organization. Or they feel like they lowballed him in the first place, and now they're trying to just make up for that lowball offer. I don't know. But all of these questions are valid when you talk about the timing of this and the way that it's being handled right now.
Well, I would say this. Julio's going to get what he wants. They're going to rework the deal. You're not going to get rid of the guy that's ostensibly the face of your franchise at age 29, still at the peak of his game. But he's going to have to, once this happens, now what Julio's done is he's put himself into a position where he's going to have to deliver. We have to have Julio Jones plus plus. I mean, in other words, he's going to have to be at his absolute best toward the end of his career here. And what do you think? Four more years, maybe?
Yeah, he got some time. But again, John, it's a bold move on his part with the season that he just had. It really is. And that's the thing that I keep looking at, because there have been times on the field where Julio Jones was a non-factor. There's been times on the field last year where Julio Jones did not come up big for you. Now, and I understand that when you look at his numbers, 88 receptions, over 1,000 yards, damn near 1,500 yards, the three TDs, that three TDs speaks out, especially when you talk about some of the TDs, that were thrown his way that were dropped. And you know what's funny? On Twitter, a lot of people were talking about how Matt Ryan was probably some of the cause of why Julio didn't touch the rock that much. You know, that's a valid point. But when you're a world-class receiver like Julio Jones is, if the ball's in your vicinity, you're supposed to catch that. You shouldn't have as many drops as you had last year.
Well, especially that one in Carolina, which probably cost him a game.
Yeah, when you're talking about making that kind of money.
I mean, that drop in Carolina might have not just cost him a game. Hugh, it might have cost him a division title.
It might have, John. But I think it's kind of bold for him to do it the way that he's doing it. And I just have to say this again. This is not me out here hating on Julio Jones. That's not what I'm doing. Everything that I'm talking about is facts. These are facts. And for him to ask for money after this season that he had, with us remembering some of the key moments in that Falcons season last year where Julio Jones either wasn't on the field or he didn't come up with a big catch, that is what, to me, it speaks volumes that he asked for more money after that season. It really does.
Does the fact that I'll speak for myself rather than ask a question. I will say this. Julio, and Hugh's right, it's bold for him to come out and do this, but if Julio backs it up, then I have no problem with the bold. Again, this could work out for both sides. It could actually work out for the team. But if Julio to do this right now with 3 years left on his contract after they just paid him $71 million a couple of years ago, now for him to come out and do this after a three-touchdown season, that's fine. I have no problem with it, and I love Julio. But I am going to be on Julio probably more than I ever have been this year to deliver on this.
That's the thing that has me scratching my head, because in the NFL it doesn't really work like that. And the reason why I'm scratching my head, because per this report from Ian Rappaport, the Falcons are okay with renegotiating this contract. Most teams, they get a little funny acting when you call them out in public or you say something like, you know, you want to renegotiate your deal or anything like that. Most teams will dig in and say, hey, you could have handled this a little bit better. They get a little petty. Now, you can look at this one of two ways. You can look at it like the Atlanta Falcons are a real stand-up organization and they're going to try to look out for their players, which I don't really kind of believe, because, you know, they're in the business of trying to save as much money as they possibly can. Or they look at it like, you know, without Julio, we can't make this thing go. It's one of the two. And I would probably think that it's probably the latter, because normally when you try to strong arm teams by going to the paper and having stories that you want more money, they tend to not look at that favorably. They really don't. And it kind of puts you in a bad spot, and they don't want to look like they're losing face.
All right, so just to this Rappaport story, there are a couple of things, too. According to Rappaport, Julio's been training in Tuscaloosa at Alabama at his school, and he has been in regular communication with Falcons head coach Dan Quinn. So they've been talking. And so he also says, Rappaport says that Jones could stay away from the voluntary portions of the OTAs, which include this week, tomorrow and Wednesday, which isn't a problem to those in charge of the Atlanta Falcons, and right now it'd probably be a good thing. Just to try and work this out, let's figure this out and move on. Look, the Falcons are going to get this done because they didn't draft Calvin Ridley because they were thinking of getting rid of Julio Jones. They drafted Calvin Ridley because they want Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu to be a phenomenal receiver core. That's why they drafted Calvin Ridley. You want to take that offense to the next level, and they figured you had to get another guy out there to help that happen, because they weren't getting that production from the number three receiver last year, Taylor Gabriel. And Justin Hardy, he's a good receiver, but Justin's never gone kind of to that next level as a wide receiver. I like Justin a lot, and I think the Falcons like Justin a lot, but I don't think he's not a starter. And so, you had to go out and get Ridley, and this is all part of the plan. You're not getting rid of – no. You've got a defense that you think can be top five in the NFL. Now you just got to get your offense back to being top five. You had to address your special teams, which are a real sore spot, which you did, by the way, with Bethel and Gage and guys like that, and maybe Ridley returning kicks. No, no, no. You're signing Julio Jones. You got a chance. You if the window's open to you, I think you go into this season thinking, we got a chance to be, man, this could be it.
And I tell you what, another thing, too. With the Falcons, basically, from per this report, and I got to keep saying that because he's the only person that has it, per this report, if they're talking about renegotiating this contract, Julio might go in there and might want to be the highest paid receiver. Like, so just that, you know, we're talking about reworking the deal. That might not be the case. There might not be enough money in this deal left to rework it. So they're going to have to tear up his contract and give him a whole new one. That might be the case, too. So, you know, just be prepared. If this is true, mm-hmm. and Ian Rapoport is reporting this, and you've just now, you've basically, if the Falcons said that they've agreed to this per Ian Rapoport, then Julio Jones has all the chips on his side of the table. So he's going to be able to go in there and potentially negotiate the price that he wants.
Well, stand by for news. We'll find out. The next couple of days are going to be interesting. The Falcons do have some OTA activities at Flowery Branch Bowl tomorrow and Wednesday. Our reporters will be out there tomorrow. Hugh and I will be out there on Wednesday, and we'll be hanging around Flowery Branch to tell you what we hear. Also, the NFL Tuesday and Wednesday in town for the spring meetings. That's going to be a big story. So you'll have the NFL and making headlines over the next couple of days. There's a college football headline that has just come to us that I want to kind of throw out there real quick if we can. This morning that has just broken out of Clemson, South Carolina, where Hunter Johnson, the five-star recruit out of high school, considered the number one quarterback coming out of high school a couple of years ago, has decided to transfer and leave Clemson. It says two things to me. Hunter Johnson couldn't beat out Kelly Bryant last year. It also says to me what I suspect might be true, that Trevor Lawrence, the five-star, number one-rated quarterback out of Cartersville, might win that job, and that Hunter Johnson sees no possibility of him becoming the starter at Clemson, so he has announced that he will transfer away from Clemson, considered to be maybe the best high school quarterback ever to come out of the state of Indiana. We'll see if Hunter Johnson goes back home to Indiana or where he goes, but he is leaving the Clemson Tigers this morning, Hunter Johnson. So another big piece of news as far as quarterbacks go in college football. All right, it's time for you to win $1,000.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
umbrella. Umbrella, umbrella, umbrella. Anyway, to 959, you have to text the word umbrella, U-M-B-R-E-L-L-A, if you never know how to spell umbrella and just listen to the Rihanna song or something. 72881, umbrella to 72881, umbrella to 72881, and $1,000 would buy you a couple of really nice umbrella. Do not text and drive, as I always say. A message of data rates may apply. Try and win you $1,000 by texting umbrella to 72881. What a weekend, huh? We'll talk with Matt Connie here in a minute about all the controversy surrounding Atlanta United. The Braves this weekend, the Dansby walk-off, just watching the replay again. Every magical season has to have some magical moments. The Braves had that meltdown moment. Remember early in the year when they went to Chicago and they were like up 10-1 and then gagged it? And had that big implosion in the bullpen where the Cubs came roaring back and beat them at Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the kind of payback for that one. A game that they had no business winning. They literally had no business winning this game. And somehow they pull it out. Now they go to Philadelphia and Boston this week. How big a week is this going to be? The next 13 games are huge for the Braves. Philadelphia, Boston, and then you have the Mets and Nationals at home. But just this week on the road, you go to Philadelphia for three, and you battle for first place in the NL East. And then you go to Fenway Park to take on the juggernaut, one of the two juggernauts of baseball in their home stadium. And, you know, that'll be statement time for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, it's going to be a great measuring stick. You know, you're playing arguably one of the best teams in baseball right now, if not the best team in the Boston Red Sox. And you're playing against the Phillies first, a team that's right behind you in the standings, in the NL East standings. So that's going to be a great test for you. I think that they're ready for this moment. I really do. You talk about the game that they had last night, John, the way that they came back in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Almost impossible feat, and the way that Dansby Swanson came up big in the ninth inning for you. This team is playing with a lot of confidence right now, and I'm pretty sure that they're probably feeling like they have house money on their side. So this is going to be where they can determine where they want to be when October rolls around.
Yeah, so the Braves, again, Phillies and Braves tonight in Philadelphia, opening a six-game road trip tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday in Philadelphia, off on Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Braves will be at Fenway Park in Boston. And if you've never been to Fenway, anybody here? I've been to Fenway, but never for a game. Anybody here been to Fenway? I was there for, but I was not there for a game. It's an unusual, if you ever get a chance to go to Boston, you got to go to Fenway. Because everything you think about Fenway gets distorted when you walk in the door there. I can see how the Green Monster screws with every right-handed hitter. Because you stand at home plate, and I got a chance to go down the field, stood at home plate. I mean, literally, Hugh, that thing is right there. You go, how can you not hit it off the wall? It's 5 feet away from you. It feels like it's right there. You could hit a bunt and hit the Green Monster. Toys with your mind is what it does. Well, there's a lot of controversy about what happened with Atlanta United last night, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Mike kind of can't, he'll have to talk about it, but he can't really say it. Atlanta United is saying it, I'll say it. That ref, Geiger, we got an issue. We got to work this out because he ain't helping us. No, I mean not helping us. He's killing us. We'll talk with Mike Conley about this next.
We played almost the perfect first half. We did exactly what we wanted to do. We created three or four good chances to score. We really kept them at bay until the penalty. So it was unfortunate that we went into the half 1-1. But the response in the second half wasn't good enough.
The response wasn't very good from the back line especially, and Atlanta United let one slip away at home, not without its share of controversy. Though anymore, I'm getting to the point, Hugh Douglas. Welcome back to the morning show, where I think when United scores a goal, what we ought to do is everybody ought to just be dead silent in the stadium until,
and wait to see what happens.
Yeah, let them go over and do the video replay, because we know it's probably not going to happen.
I tell you what, I cannot wait till Rick and John come up, Rick Kamler, because Rick is very, very upset about that. The simple fact that they shot off the pyrotechnics. And they had to recall the goal, so he was definitely upset about that. So he's going to be on fire.
Yeah, the man who had the call on the goal, of course, play-by-play voice of Atlanta United is Mike Conley, and he joins us this morning on the WaveForward.com hotline. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. I know that you can't speak much to it, but, I mean, I did find it interesting, and you and I were talking about it, that Tato Martino came out after the game, after the goal was wiped off by – which, by the way, I'll just say this for me, and I'll let you weigh in on it, Mike. I think it was incidental contact. The goal ought to have stood. Tato said, I'm not talking about the referee. I'm talking about the same person. He's talking about Mark Geiger. In one game he refereed, in the other he reviewed, and they were decisive in the outcome of the game. Atlanta United, not happy with this guy at all.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of let Tata's comments speak for themselves on that. I have really nothing to add. My big problem is I don't think the video-assisted referee is being used correctly anymore. And, I don't want to get into a long technical explanation, guys, but just really quick. VAR is supposed to be used in four occasions. If there's an instance of a red card, we saw that last night, it was used correctly. If there's an instance of mistaken identity where maybe one player is identified for discipline when it should have been another, it has worked well in that case as well. Penalty kicks, did a foul occur in the penalty area? We've seen VAR used correctly for that a number of times this year, especially in the LAFC and Vancouver matches. But the fourth one calls for the use of VAR for goals or action in the buildup of a goal that leads to a goal. And this is where I think we have a problem, because we're seeing VAR used now for judgment calls. And that's not the way the law was intended. I think, quite frankly, VAR should be used only to determine a goal line call. Did the ball cross the goal line or not? Because what we have now is the catch rule, or the problem they've had in the National Hockey League, where every time a goal is scored, you don't even want to celebrate it yet because you know the video review is coming. In the instance of the Martinez play last night, I thought he was fouled by Tim Parker. I mean, at absolute worst, you have an accidental tangling of knees. I have no idea, or legs. I have no idea how you could look at that, how Mark Geiger could look at that and say, hey, that's a clear and obvious error by the referee, Chris Pensa. We need to overturn that. I didn't see any hand fighting. I didn't see Joseph push him down. I didn't see him leg with him or anything like that. If anyone else saw it, tell me. But even if you agree that Joseph tripped Tim Parker last night, was it really a clear and obvious error if Chris Pensa, the referee, was right on top of it and didn't call it, and the assistant referee on the near side touchline didn't call anything either? That's not a clear and obvious error. So, to me, that's not a situation where VAR should have been used. It's very unfortunate, because if Atlanta United had a 2-0 lead, then the Red Bulls have to get out of their press, which is killing Atlanta United, It's a totally different match. So very, very unfortunate. But like we have said before, you cannot put yourself in a position to let the referee decide the game. And that's what Atlanta United did to themselves again last night.
You know, speaking of the referee and putting yourself in position for that, this is the second time that something like this has happened to Atlanta United and the second time that this referee has been involved with said calls that affected the outcome of the game. Do you think there's a conspiracy theory against Atlanta United at this point?
No, no. No, absolutely not, Hugh. No, I love you, Hugh, but no. And by the way, Mark Geiger's a World Cup referee. I mean, he's one of the best in CONCACAF and MLS. No, there's no conspiracy. Hell, I mean, the Orlando City fans are probably looking at this thinking, well, what goes around comes around, because they were on the wrong end of some 50-50 decisions last Sunday in Orlando. I thought they were correct decisions, but no, there's no conspiracy. And you know, we have seen VAR help Atlanta United a lot this year. It was the use of VAR that gave them a penalty kick against Vancouver and had a player sent off, seeing in the LAFC match. So now this is just one of those things. I think, again, rather than focusing on who the VAR was last night, I think we need to focus on the law and clean it up and make it so judgment calls, just like in the NFL, you don't do replay reviews for pass interference, right? It's a judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to clean this up where judgment calls are not going to video review on every goal now.
It is. Mike Heine's play-by-play voice of Atlanta United, and now 10 days off for Atlanta United before they return on the 30th against the Revolution in New England. Mike, to the fact that, all right, set aside all the other stuff, against Sporting Kansas City and against New York Red Bulls, two high-press teams have beaten your 3-5-2. Does that mean we have to reshape against these teams and make adjustments because the back line was stressed yesterday and the back line got beat?
Well, yes, but the Sporting Kansas City match and the Red Bulls match felt different to me because I still thought Atlanta United had SKC on the ropes, even playing down a man against that high press. New York Red Bulls, they play their high press differently than Sporting Kansas City. I thought Jason had a really good explanation for it last night, where it's not necessarily with Red Bulls. It's not really a north-south line across the pitch. They flood wings. And the problem last night for Atlanta United, and I mentioned on Twitter, they passed at only 71% accuracy, which was by far a season low. The reason why, you know, if they're trying to send it up the wing, if LGP is trying to send it up to Gressel, when LGP has the ball, he's suddenly surrounded by four or five New York Red Bulls players. It felt like at times the Red Bulls had 20 men on the pitch. That's how well they were executing that press. And that's something that Atlanta United was unable to solve. But you had a couple major disruptions to match flow last night. You know, you had the Martinez goal being wiped down. Then you had the penalty against Miles Robinson, which I'm not 100% sure that was a penalty kick. Then, early in the second half, you had Lorenowitz red carded, and then the red card rescinded, but only after review. And then quickly after that, Red Bull scored two goals. So the match was extremely disjointed. And I'm wondering if it had been a little more free-flowing, if Tata and Atlanta United would have been able to figure out a way to break that press. But to me, the big storyline was not the officiating last night. I thought the Red Bulls were the better team. I really, really do. I thought there was a long stretch, maybe after the Martinez goal was disallowed, where they outplayed Atlanta United. Jason Longshore disagrees with me. But I thought the five stripes were outplayed last night by Red Bulls, and that's the big storyline to me.
You know what's funny, Mike Conte? I was about to ask you that because I was reading somewhere where they said that the New York Red Bulls are the team to beat in MLS. By you seeing them firsthand last night, do you feel that that is the case?
They're really good. I don't know if 1 through 11 they are talented enough to be the team to beat in MLS. They, in my opinion, they've got three really good players. Bradley Wright Phillips, who scored twice, Daniel Royer, who converted the penalty kick, and Kaku. Three really good players. And they run their system very, very well. I worry about, are they deep enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can they survive the grind of the MLS season? There's still two-thirds of the season to play and postseason. I look at Atlanta United, and Toronto, and maybe even New York City, and I know they lost 4-0 to Red Bulls, but I look at those three rosters, and to me, I think they've got more overall talent than New York Red Bulls. But their three best players played great matches last night. Jesse March is a very, very intelligent manager. They're running his system very, very well. I was very impressed with them last night, but I don't quite know if I would go there yet and call them the team to beat the MLS.
Well, you got 10 days off to kind of, you know, rethink this and kind of, you know, reimagine what you are, I guess, and shake all this off. We'll see if MLS comes out and fines Tata for his comments. I don't know if the league will or not, but
Hey, John, can I interrupt 1 second?
Sure.
You talk about changing shape for New England.
Uh-huh.
You know, remember, they played 4-2-3-1 against SKC, and they were having problems against the press with them.
Right.
So I don't know if it's necessarily a change of shape that they're going to have to execute, but remember now for this New England match, LGP is suspended, Garza is suspended. So just because of personnel alone,
right,
I think there's a very good chance you're
right
on the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, Mike, we do appreciate you taking a few minutes. We look forward to a little downtime and kind of lick our wounds here and then get back on that horse and start riding again. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, the sun came up today. Everything's still fine.
Mike Conney, play-by-play voice of Atlanta United, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. And again, 10 days off until the match against the New England Revolution on Wednesday, May 30th. And then there's back-to-back matches. They'll play Saturday, June 2nd, in their next home game against Philadelphia Union on Saturday, June 2nd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But, yeah, a lot of controversy about this, so we'll see how this all kind of weighs out with Atlanta United. Hey, we're going to have a little shindy coming up on Wednesday, June 6th, that we want you to be part of, okay? It is our Top Golf. You know how everybody has a golf tournament? This year we're going to have a different kind of a golf tournament. We're going to go to Top Golf and do some target golf with teams, with lots of celebrities. You, Grady Jarrett's going to help us present it. And listen to this. I mean, in addition to everybody from the station that's going to be there, Brian Jordan, Vic Beasley, Spoon, Spikes, Ray Lewis, Deshaun Williams, Derek Shelby. And we want people to go and sign up and become part of this on Wednesday, June 6th. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, still some teams available. So go and sign up like right now. Go to our website, 9290 Game, and sign up like right now. There's still some spots available, and you need to be a part of this. It's going to be a nice day. Top Golf is awesome. It's an awesome time. So check it out.
Yeah, and it's going to be just a different way to do a golf tournament because we'll all be there, and you'll be able to, you know, whereas in a regular golf tournament, if you have one celebrity there, that's pretty much who you'd see, right, until
yeah,
the end of the tournament. Oh, you'll be able to hang around with all of them.
And you know what the best part about this one is? You don't have to wait for the cart girl to come around and get a drink.
No.
You go right to the bar.
Yeah.
Good times.
When we get back, some of the stories we may have missed on a very busy Monday. We welcome Wendy back into the show after coming off vacation. We'll go into the Wendy Zone next with John and you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, everybody stand up!
It's time for a look at the world of sports, celebrities, and more. This is the Wendy Zone on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, have you guys been keeping up at all?
With?
Well, with what we're all supposed to be keeping up with. I'm talking about Dancing with the Stars,
oh,
the
no,
Athletes Edition.
You know, I thought about that the other day when it came on,
mm-hmm,
and I was like, I am not doing my homework when it comes
you
to
are
Dancing
not
with the Stars.
No one in here is doing their homework because tonight, John, believe it or not, is the finale.
Oh, really?
With three celebrities or athletes that are left in the competition. By the way, John, you still owe me and Hugh $17.50 each on a gift card.
Oh, that's right. Thanks for reminding me. I'm not cheap. I just forget these things.
Sorry, Hugh. We split $35.
Who was our contestants? I forgot.
You forgot who you picked?
Yeah, I did.
I think you have two left in the finale because I'm awesome and I didn't write them down. But I know one of mine is left, so that would be Adam Rippon, who's a figure skater. He just competed in the latest Winter Olympic Games. Tanya Harding.
Yes, that's who it was.
Yes.
Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding is in the finals.
So you and Hugh each have one in the finals?
And no, there's one more person. Josh Norman. Hugh,
yes.
You picked Josh Norman too.
I did.
You have two of the finals. Wow.
So Hugh has two in the finals. I have one. Sorry, you guys. Y'all are eliminated tonight. But the contestants will be performing one unlearned dance and a freestyle dance.
Okay.
And the cool part is none of their partners have won the mirror ball trophy
so
either.
So somebody's going to win it. So
yes.
Of the three, you've watched this. Who's the best dancer of those three?
I mean, all of these are great dancers. I mean, the best one's going to be Adam. He's the best out of the dancers. But they all can dance. They just have different styles. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And she shows the most, well, because she's a figure skater, so she's had to show.
Right.
You know,
Tanya was a beast when she figure skated.
Yeah.
she just, you know.
And there's something that's been connecting her with people, I think, on the show. So I think people are starting to come around to Tonya Harding.
Well, that's good. If this is her kind of rebirth, you, that would be a good thing for her.
Yeah. I mean, Tonya's not a, like, from the, per the I, Tonya, she didn't seem like a real bad person. She just had some bad breaks.
But whoever wins tonight, I think, gets that a $10 gift card to their choice of fast food places.
All right.
I will say this, that Tonya Harding, if you haven't seen I, Tonya, it's an adult film, but boy, it's really good, and it really does make you. I know it's her side of the story, but boy, it makes
poor
you feel
choices,
for her.
John. An adult film. It is a.
She's made one of those.
Yeah. No, it's a.
It was kind of terrible.
It's a movie that is not for children. Okay, it's just a. There's a lot of cursing and fighting and stuff, and yeah. Okay, anyway, sorry.
Just watch it before your children watch it, is what John is trying to say. Well, speaking of movies, Deadpool 2 has ended the three-week reign of Avengers Infinity War at the top of the box office. It raked in $125 million domestically, $301 million globally. It had the biggest foreign debut ever for an R-rated title, but the domestic record is still held by the first Deadpool movie, which made $132.4 million back in February of 2016. And Infinity War came in second this week at the box office. But Hugh, did you go see Deadpool 2?
No, I didn't. You know what? And Grant told me he saw it, and he told me it is ramped up and is much better than the first one. But I, you know what I think what happened was everybody's still digesting the Infinity War. And, you know, people saw it, but I think people are still kind of reeling over the Infinity War. And that's why Deadpool didn't do as well. I think they would have been better off bringing out Deadpool first and then the Infinity War. They really would have. But, you know, I'm still going to go see it, but I am not as excited to see it as I was to see the Infinity War. Yeah.
I think you're like most people, but still did a great job at the box office. Well, last week, I know I wasn't here, but have you seen the comments made by John Cena? You know, he and Nikki Bella had ended their engagement, or she rather ended the engagement because she wanted to have children. And I forget which talk show he went on, but I made sure I retweeted it because this is how you know when a guy really loves you and he really wants to be with you, he will do things in order to make that happen. Well, John Cena went on this talk show and said that he wants to now be the father of Nikki Bella's children and will do anything to get her back. They were actually spotted in San Diego together, just outside of a coffee shop, just taking a stroll. Hey. So
I was right.
Whitney, he'll do everything except marry her.
No, they were engaged. So he said, first he said, no, I will never marry you. Then he said, no, I do not want to have children. Now he is saying, I want to win you back and I will have your children.
You bought this.
No, but Whitney,
you got a hook in your mouth. You bought this.
Listen to what you just said.
Which is great.
He said nothing about marriage. He said children.
He says, I want to marry her. I want to have her children.
He said that?
Yes, he did.
Well, he was wrong because he can't have her children. He could be the father.
That's what I meant.
No, but I'll pick it.
But it's so good to be back. Thanks, Hugh.
This whole thing.
Schmertz on a Monday.
This whole thing is orchestrated. This was they had everybody believing this is true.
And you know what? I just want to apologize to the people. No, I don't. I'm not going to apologize for that. But
don't
you know what?
Because you don't want to apologize. That
are up all up in their feelings about this royal wedding stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's coming
Y'all
up.
Need to stop with that. It's not that big a deal. It's not.
All right, Hugh, I'm putting down this John Cena story. Thanks, John Cena, for proving that if men really want a woman, he will do what it takes
to
make it happen.
He ain't going
to
marry her, though.
He's going to marry her.
I give you a baby.
They're going to have children. Well, what he was talking about was the royal wedding over the weekend. It was on Saturday. I made sure I was up bright and early at 5:30 a.m. Central Time in order to watch this wedding between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. There were a ton of celebrities there, and that was pretty much the story leading up to the royal wedding. One of them included Oprah, who had an incident Friday morning when she realized her beige dress would have looked white, so Stella McCartney's team came up with an outfit within a 24-hour period, and it was a really nice peach-colored replacement that Oprah wore. Serena Williams was also in attendance, and she tweeted out an Instagram picture. She actually wore sneakers with her dress that she wore to the royal wedding and also had sneakers when she wore her dress to the reception. But Hugh, what were you saying earlier about Meghan Markle? Because she was had one of the bigger wins over the weekend.
Yes. I have to give a shout out to my friend Kimberly, the Falcons diva. She jumped all over me when I was giving out.
Be careful, because there's going to be more women jumping all over you. $22.4 million people watched the royal wedding.
Yes, and a lot of people got upset.
I bet they did.
And they were upset about some of the comments that I made.
Mm-hmm. What'd you make, Hugh?
I was just saying that, you know, she is basically giving up her life to marry a royal. And that none of her friends were invited. And that's why Kimberly jumped
her
all over.
Her friends were invited.
I know.
She had lots of friends there.
And she said, in her quote, she said she was correcting me because I was being loud and wrong.
You are.
But I'm loud and wrong every day. So what's the difference? Why do I get so much heat for being loud and wrong about the royal family, which I don't care anything about? Y'all haven't figured
out
yet.
You do care.
I don't care. I just like, especially doing certain things, I just like to get other people's skin by saying crazy mm-hmm. stuff that is not true just to see how invested you are in people that you don't even really know. And that's what, it's amazing to me that women
you
got up
know
at
them.
5 o'clock in the morning
sure
to
is.
Have these
right,
parties.
Yes, they did.
For folks that you don't even
so
know.
Did my wife.
But you know what? I get it, though, because every young girl, every little girl has a dream about being a princess.
You want to be a princess.
And that you got to get that dream up because he was probably the last prince ever to be able to get married because all the rest of them married.
No, he's not the last prince ever. There's a lot of princes in the world.
Yeah, but we don't have to go through one of these royal weddings for the next 20 years.
What am I doing, Whitney? I'm doing what I always do. I'm being loud and wrong.
Thank God.
Let me be loud and wrong. Let me be
Noted.
Loud and wrong.
Noted.
All right. We'll be loud, that's for sure. With Rick and John, Rick wants to be loud today. Whew, man of mercy. Stand by for that. On this very busy Monday on Sports Radio 92.9.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.